Good day. I'm Warren Thompson and welcome to the market webinar with MoneyWeb. Today I have the great privilege of having Anthea Gardner, the founder of Cartesian Capital, with me. Good to have you with us, Anthea.
Thanks, Warren. Good to be here.
So we have a fairly open engagement today. We're going to talk a lot about the markets, news flow, where you see value in the market, a little bit about your investment philosophy, but it's going to be quite broad ranging. So let's see where it goes. And obviously this idea of the webinar is to have a very interactive session. So we encourage the listeners to get in touch with us. You can either ask your questions through the webinar forum or window, which will be on your screens. Or if you prefer a more traditional communication, you can email me at warren@moneyweb.co.za. And then I'll put those questions to Anthea as we proceed. But I think, Anthea, let's just kick it off with the global environment that we find ourselves in. We've got a Mad Hatter US president. We've got a lot of things happening politically in South Africa. And I wanted to just try and unpack the role of an investment manager in this environment between separating out news flow and longer term trends that affect the valuation of companies and other financial instruments. Just from your perspective, I know we spoke a little bit before the webinar about this, but the importance of understanding the short-term news flow versus longer-term drivers in markets. Just give us your perspective on how you pick and separate those two issues.
Sure, Warren. I think if you're talking from a trader's perspective, then it's an absolute that you'd have to pay attention to the news if you're a trader. But we're speaking as asset managers now. And then it becomes a little bit different. And so when we look to buy a share, we will base our decisions on the fundamentals of the company. You know, is it a good company? Does it have good balance sheet? Does it have strong management, good cash flow? Is it in the right sector for where the environment is at the moment? What happens with news flow is that the market tends to react very quickly. And the question is, does the news flow affect the fundamentals of the company? And that's always where I make a decision. So, and there are so many examples of it, actually. So I try not to let news flow or knee-jerk reactions impact my investment decisions. So many examples. And one of the ones I can think of was PPC. It was such a good example because in 2014 or 15, when Ketso Gordon resigned, just before then, I'd bought some shares based on the fundamentals of the company. You know, sure, they were in a sector in construction where in South Africa, where we were looking at lower GDP growth and potentially not so great for the company, but they were expanding into Africa. They were just building their plant in Ethiopia, in DRC. Margins were almost double what they were in South Africa. And so it looked like a great story. Then Ketso Gordon resigned, and suddenly I had to make a decision about whether it was a fundamental change in the company or just an employee leaving. And actually, at the time, I remember this day so clearly because it's a very difficult decision to make. And there was something about the way he left and how he left that made me sell out my shares. And thank goodness, because the company actually has never recovered. Now, if I'd stuck to my very firm decision that only fundamentals and those drivers are why I should be owning a share, then I probably would have held on to the share for a bit longer or potentially all the way down even. But I think part of my decision to get out of the share at the time was that I honestly believe management play a very strong role in guiding us into what's going to happen in the business. So if you're meeting with a company CEO and he says to you, well, these are our plans for growth in the future, these are our timelines, and particularly with PPC as an example, they had set fairly good timelines about when they thought their African plants were going to come online and how much they could produce and where they were going to sell their product. You trust the CEO to do that. And when the CEO suddenly resigns, you have to make a decision about those things that he's telling you. So can the company actually deliver on the drivers or the factors or kind of the targets that they've given you? And so it's not an obvious one. I try not to react to news flow, but you almost have to listen to it. And invariably, the times I do react to news flow are really governance issues. And for this, I'm thinking of Pinnacle pretty much around the same time, or just months apart, actually. One of the directors was accused. I don't think he was even actually indicted at the time, but he was just accused of taking a bribe. Share price plummeted on the news. And then you kind of have to make the decision about, is it a company-wide issue or is it just one person in the company? And half the time, you know, these shares are driven by sentiment in the market, unfortunately. If it was all fundamentals, it would be a lot easier. And then also you have to decide whether the market is going to like that kind of aura around it, and whether they're going to keep the share suppressed or whether they're actually just going to be forgiving of it. And so as a medium to long-term investor, you just need to be cognizant of market sentiment and the temperature of other investors around you, I think.
That departure of Ghetto Gordhan is very interesting. I just wanted to ask you there. Obviously, we know that in most cases, CEOs are creatures of long-term compensation and remuneration schemes. They might have shares that vest and that they still want to exercise at some point in the future. So the reasons that the company gave at that point for his departure, you clearly weren't satisfied that that was the case, right?
That's exactly right.
Is this always a red flag, whether it be the CFO or the CEO, when there's a sudden departure? You as an investor, not just as a trader, really need to dig into that and try and establish why this person has left.
Absolutely. And invariably, the company is not going to tell you the truth. They're going to sell you the marketing or the PR line.
Personal reasons.
That's the favorite one.
Spend time with family. Spend more time with family, right?
Yes. And so it's not always easy to judge, right? And fair enough, they need to protect their brand as well. But it does give you an insight. And also, if a CEO or CFO leaves and sells shares, then there's definitely an issue. It's definitely a big red flag and an indicator that he actually doesn't believe in the long-term growth of the company. And many CEOs of listed companies, particularly in South Africa, really make it their lifetime work to build a company, to make it grow. And so I think that loyalty in South Africa that CEOs have to their companies is a pretty good thing. But if it diminishes or it wanes, then it's an indicator.
Just touching on that as well. So the kind of rule of thumb, I think, for investors with respect to the share transactions of directors and senior executives is that you don't question when they buy too much. You question more when they sell. Or is it the other way around? You question there's only one reason for buying, whereas there could be multiple reasons for selling shares?
Yes, I think there could be multiple reasons. I think maybe we shouldn't read too much into it. You know, people do want to live. People do want to diversify. People have cash flow demands that perhaps are not related to the performance of the company. So we don't like it when they sell shares, but maybe let's not read too much into it.
One more question just around news flow and distinguishing between news flow and longer term drivers in a business. In your personal investment philosophy that you apply to your segregated portfolios and your funds, does the importance of looking at the macro situation, does that need to be gauged as well? Because if we look at the news flow in South Africa, I think we probably both agree that it's been very negative of late. But how much does it say about our market and the ability of our economy to grow and to function, these events that we've kind of seen over the last few weeks?
I think, Warren, when we talk about the political environment, the stock market and the economy, we as South Africans have found it very difficult, especially in the last year, to separate it out. And so I think the economy the stock market effectively should reflect the economy. But the stock market doesn't always, you know, it takes a while before things happen. And then when you're in the thick of it from a political point of view, and it is very emotive, you tend to make it seem worse than it is. And so the last 6 months really have proven to us that even though the political environment feels very heavy and there's a lot going on and South Africans really don't like it, foreign investors still come to us because they are almost unemotional about it. And they say that there is yield, there is growth, there are shares that still have value in them. And so they're happy to still be invested and to take a chance on South Africa from an investment point of view.
I think the other thing that's muddying the waters as well is that link between the economy and financial markets with something like the JSE, where we have a wide assortment of companies that are both multinational and global in nature, as well as companies that are very concentrated on the local economy. It's the market, it's almost like the JSE has become, it's morphed into a mini kind of mix of even emerging market and developed market exposures is the word I think we call it, as well as the difference in size. I mean, you've got everything from a BHP Billiton at the top all the way down to a small company that might be providing services in a very specialized field. So it's quite hard to make that distinction now if it does reflect the economy as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And you make it sound like a bad thing, but actually it's a great thing because we have got that diversity. We have got that very strong rand hedge element in the equity market. And so we're almost defensive in nature just by the way the stock market is positioned or the companies in South Africa have grown, which I think is a fantastic thing. So it's an interesting point because I often distinguish between my Rand hedge and my local portfolio, and especially of late, so sort of with what's going on politically and the cabinet reshuffle and the downgrade, of course, is the big issue for me was that banks and retailers, which really are very much local shares, would come under a lot of pressure. And that's fundamentally driven, right? If you're going to reshuffle your cabinet and then get downgraded by the credit ratings agencies, the fundamentals change. And the fundamentals change in that the way the interest rates go up, the consumer becomes under pressure because inflation goes up, and that makes a big difference in projections for the economy and also for the companies that are operating in that economy. And these are listed companies, of course. What I found very interesting was the post-downgrade bounce, little bounce, because they haven't got back all their losses after the downgrade, but the banks.
Right.
And why it is, I think, is because right now the banks look very cheap. So if you're looking at a Barclays, it's on just on a 7x forward PE, it's on about a 7% dividend yield, it's on a 1.3 times book price to book ratio. It is such an attractive proposition, but right. Over our heads, we have this potential Moody's decision hanging. And if they downgrade us, it will have an impact on the stock market because it really will, again, just change everything. And so I'm absolutely desperate to buy some banks at the moment, but I really want to wait and see what happens with Moody's. So partly sentiment, partly kind of, and I think the economic impact will take a much longer time to flow through into the stock market.
Right.
You know, so sure, we saw banks and retailers come under pressure immediately after the downgrade. We saw the Rand blow out a little bit, but it seems to be very strong and happy to be strong again. I mean, you know, there's so many things about this. I mean, we could talk about the trade account in a minute. But so where we are now is if we were following every piece of news flow, we would just be buying and selling shares every single day because it's almost contradictory in a way. So you've got the downgrade, you've got the higher interest rates, you've got the credit going down. But at the same time, you've got very cheap stocks and potentially they could really bring you great returns. At the same time, what do? You kind of want to almost close out the news flow for a bit and just right. Focus again on the fundamental drivers, but just be aware of what's going on around you.
Okay. We've got a few questions coming in from our listeners and we encourage them to continue asking those questions through the platform or via email. You can email me, warren@moneyweb.co.za. Here's a question from Mary Jane, and this obviously, it relates to ethics and corporate governance. Any thoughts about Bluetel and effect of NetOne shareholding? I'm not too sure that the NetOne Bluetel, what the link is there, but the following question was, what role does the ethics of the business play in investment decisions? Now, when I started studying finance, it was all about financial analysis and very little in our textbooks at the time was about ethics and corporate governance. I think the last, and perhaps the global financial crisis, has revealed the importance of how important the ESG factors are, how important the role of corporate governance in a company is. How do you think about the role of corporate governance and the constitution of the board and the way that the company deals with ESG factors in your investment framework?
One of the things that actually does bother me at the moment is that I don't quantify corporate governance. And in fact, it is very difficult to quantify corporate governance. And so as we were saying with PPC, is that you need to have a face-to-face and kind of almost trust your gut instinct and work with that and question around it. I think it's hugely important. Now, saying that, I also think that if I put a lot of emphasis on ESG or corporate social responsibility, I probably would never buy a tobacco stock in my life, but I would have missed out on a huge rally, right?
Right.
And so I think from a broader perspective, I'm less inclined to focus on those factors. But when I realize, and especially from a management point of view, that they impact on the fundamentals or something's wrong in the business, that red flag, that warning, you cannot ignore it. Like everything we do has to be in line with kind of the ethics, the right way to do things, the right way to run a business. I'm afraid I think it does invariably catch up with you if you don't.
Right. Let's get our hands dirty because we're almost halfway through the webinar now. And we're obviously encouraging our listeners to continue asking questions. Let's talk a little bit about the stock market and about shares that you're invested in. And we can perhaps start off with, you've mentioned the fact that the banks look very attractive, but there is this dark cloud that's hanging over them with consequences that we can't really predict with a great amount of accuracy. I think we understand that it's probably going to be quite negative for the consumer and the banks themselves. But where in this news flow, has there been any areas or companies that have popped up that have been, the baby's been thrown out of the bathwater, if we can use that term?
So I'd have to think about exact shares that kind of are absolute musts at the moment. I must admit that my portfolio is currently very strongly positioned towards Rand hedges. And I've been lucky, I must admit, with kind of the Mediclinics and the Richemonts of the world. So, you know, there was a time when they didn't perform as well for me, but they've kind of come to the party now. But again, it's partly to do with global and it's event-driven, in fact, in almost both these companies. Where would we say that we've been thrown out with, you know, the companies that have really suffered? I'm still a little bit nervous of companies that generate their revenue only locally. But there's no doubt there will come a time when I need to be buying a Barclays or a Standard Bank. The other share I'm watching quite carefully is MTN. So I think that could potentially be a great turnaround story. The metrics, you know, it really has been depressed as a company and things have been very difficult and they've had all sorts of issue with the Nigeria fine, the inability to repatriate their currency or their money that they make. They now have a new CEO. In fact, they've got a new executive team almost. I think potentially that MTN may not continue in the way that it has before as a mobile telecoms company. I think there's opportunity for them because they've got such extensive footprint to reshape or remanage the company and to diversify potentially into mobile payments or finance and actually the fact that they've got Rob Shooter and Stephen van Coller on board coming from finance backgrounds gives us a hint into what they're looking at, I think. But they still need a bit of time to turn the company around.
Just to clarify that, so Rob Shooter, as far as I understand, he's been working overseas for a little while and the chairman, Phuthuma Nhleko, has hired him to come back as the CEO. He's now taken over, has he?
Absolutely. So I think he put his feet under the desk in the beginning of March or somewhere around there.
Okay.
And so Rob's background is from Nedbank. He was based here. Then he moved into Vodacom. Then they sent him offshore. He was doing a lot of local stuff. And then they put him in charge of Europe, Vodacom. So he really has got a nice experience of telecoms and finance, which I think will stand MTN in good stead.
And then Stephen van Coller, of course, was the chief executive of Absa's corporate and investment bank, right? So he's a finance man through and through.
What's interesting about the Stephen van Coller situation is that they initially employed him to be head up the strategy, but I see they've just recently moved him to take over what they call, I think it was digitalization or something. And in my head, it means kind of mobile payments. It means entertainment. I'm still not sure exactly what the product range he's going to be focusing on, because that's where they see the future of MTN, and I think, I'm surmising, that that's where they see the future of MTN.
So this is quite a big philosophical question for the company, because you're going right past, you know, telephony in the form of voice and data onto a more broader
potentially content offering. Providing.
Content.
So they haven't really revealed a huge new strategy, but it does look like they are turning the ship around a little bit, and that's one of the ways they're doing it.
Anthea, you favoured Rand hedges in your portfolio. You've mentioned that. Where does the commodity spectrum fit inside of that? Are you an owner of any mining companies? Have you been buying any of the mining or resource companies?
I do own the mining companies, and they've done well up till last year, and then this year they've disappointed a little bit. And I've tended to be in the diversified miners rather than the very specific stocks. They tend to be very volatile, you know, the Kumba iron ores, especially with kind of what's happened in spot. Spanish golds tend to be very volatile, whereas the Anglo and the Billiton are my preferred picks. And even at this stage, I would say they still are my preferred picks in the commodity space. So it's nice that we've had, from a South African stock market point of view, a kind of a lift through the global economic growth story. You know, so it's great that America's growing, China's still growing at the pace we want to see, that commodity prices have increased and really paid off for us. So I do still like the Anglo-Billiton diversified miners sector.
And it seems that you've preferred the quality there because these are what we call the diversified miners. So they're operating very much across commodities, BHP probably more so than Anglo. Is it a quality factor that's attracted you there as well?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And everything about kind of the company and the underlying fundamentals work so much better than potentially kind of the one-trick ponies, and that sounds bad, but more kind of the more focused players.
And the monoline producers.
Yes, that's what I was looking for. That's the word I was looking for.
Okay, great. Just moving aside to some of the small and mid-caps, I don't know how you think about these. These are obviously companies that fall outside maybe the top 100 companies on the JSE because of various factors. They're probably not covered as well as some of the bigger companies. Do you look at investing in the small and mid-cap space?
Oh, I absolutely do. But Warren, one of my investment philosophies is that I'm very benchmark cognizant, and it is mandate dependent. But what that also brings out in me is liquidity and volatility risk. So potentially it's because of my background, and I don't want to be two separate incidences where liquidity dried up, 2000 and 2008, where we saw these mid to small cap shares really under a huge amount of pressure, more so than they should have been, not because they were bad companies, but because investors were completely selling out of equities and they didn't care where, at what level they sold out at. So I'm very cognizant of them. But yes, absolutely. I also believe that's where you can generate good alpha. And so, yes, quite a few of them that I look at, you know, I mean, I don't know where the line is exactly. I'm loath to name a few in case they think they're big, large caps and I'm calling them mid-cap shares.
Right. Okay. I think that the question then is also around with the mid-caps and the small-caps. You know, there might be some people listening to this webinar that might think about investing in them. What are the risks?
I would say volatility and liquidity risk are your two biggest issues. And so as investors, I think liquidity and cash flow are huge issues for us. And if you're talking about it from a personal portfolio that you're building, I would say always keep at least some money in some sort of capital preservation fund, like a money market fund, just so that if you need it and when you need money, the market could potentially be down. So that to me is the biggest risk for personal or private individuals is that they are forced to sell out when the market is under pressure. I mean, we know what happened in 2008. The shares all came down just from a global perspective. And if you were a forced seller at the time, you were almost selling kind of 30, 40% lower than where you were 6 months ago. But if you'd waited another 18 months, you would have recovered all those losses. And if you'd waited another 2 years, you would have doubled your money, or whatever the case may, maybe not 2 years, but 6 years, you would have doubled your money. So it really is about liquidity management. And that is the issue, I think, when you're invested in small and mid caps, is that you can get caught on the wrong side of not necessarily the fundamentals of the company, but also right, sentiment, which you hadn't factored in.
Okay. And that's quite an important distinction to make. We struggle with this idea, just turning our attention now to the structure of our market, which is still dominated by large institutional investors, right? And part of your business is providing investment services to pension funds and other types of corporate clients. We seem to struggle with the ability to get large amounts of the population involved directly in the stock market. In other words, by opening a brokerage account and actually buying and selling shares themselves. Why do you think, despite having an exchange that's been around for over 100 years, we still have a market that looks like this, that's still dominated by these large institutions?
I think it was last year when the JSE said that there are only, in a country of 57 million people, there are only 290,000 individual unique stock accounts, which, considering it's such a good, defensive, liquid stock market, is very worrying. I think it's about education. I really do think it's about training people, speaking to them about around the dinner table, around the braai, at about what the kind of how to invest in the stock market. You know, we've kind of, and especially people like us, we know the stock market and we just talk about it automatically, but that doesn't happen in every household. And that financial literacy, that education around investment and the benefits of saving rather than buying on credit I believe, the only way to do it. My industry is very particular about that, actually. It's a very strange thing. In the asset management business, we really focus on the very kind of high net worth individuals or the large institutional funds. And part of it is we're trying to build businesses, and so we're needing to generate revenue, and it's much easier to get a mandate to manage 100 million rand than it is to be invested or to take time out to talk to a client who has 10,000 rand. It's just as it is. But at the same time, I do realize that if we don't grow this kind of investment base or number of people who are investing in the stock market, then I'm afraid my industry is in a lot of trouble. You know, you can't continually want to slice up the same part of the pie. You really need to expand that pie. And the only way to do it is to offer product that is appropriate to the larger population rather than just servicing the kind of very top of the pyramid.
And this is obviously where a lot of this kind of joint venture between you and Gareth Cliff and the hashtag Invest product platform that you've put together is doing. So just tell us about that.
Absolutely, yes. So that has been one of my pride and joys, in fact. So we started four portfolios. They're called the hashtag Invest portfolios. They're sitting on the Easy Equities platform, and so you can go, you can log in, it's all digital, you can open an account, you can invest in one of my portfolios for as little as 100 rand, and I will manage those portfolios for you. You know, you've got a choice of conservative all the way through to aggressive that you can choose from depending on who you are, how old you are, what your risk profile is. And I try to do an education. In fact, Gareth and I try to do very much an educational. We talk about it every day. Who are you? How old are you? What is your risk appetite? Are you saving? Because if you're saving, then you need to be in a very conservative portfolio. If you're a more medium to long-term investor, then go for the growth or the aggressive portfolios, because that's where you're going to generate higher returns. But understand that it's going to be volatile. And so our kind of teaming up really came out of, exactly as you say, the need to educate and to bring new investors into the stock market. In fact, in the first 3 months, we brought 800 people, and most of them had never invested before. I'm proud to say that the portfolios have done particularly well, because it's always difficult if you're introducing new people to the stock market and the market's very volatile, it falls, and, you know, I really would like to see a lot more of that happening.
Absolutely. I think that would be a great thing to see a market like ours, which is very highly regarded, well governed, quite a lot of liquidity at the top end of it, where lots of buyers and sellers, so you can get in and out of stocks, develop into something like what China and the US has. It's part of an ownership culture.
Indeed, absolutely. That's exactly right. It's part of an ownership culture, really. Right.
With that, Anthea, we've hit our full time. So I'd like to thank you very much for participating. It's been very fascinating listening to you. And we'd like to stay in touch and see especially how that hashtag Invest product platform and the education of the clients goes. And thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Warren. That was fun.
That was Anthea Gardner, the founder of Cartesian Capital. And thank you very much for listening to our webinar today.